with us some information on urea.
I'm Eric May, and you see up there a series of authors, and essentially you're dealing with what I call a cast of thousands. I want to get involved in this. Dr. Allen and our friends, I'm a pathologist. He is actually a person who works with soil. I call it dirt, and basically got me into this. Essentially, we're going to look at the issue, and we have a series of studies that were conducted to look at the issue of urea, its reformation in ditches, and essentially how it is getting into the Chesapeake Bay region. So I'm going to review a series of studies. All were broken down into phases. Those phases were hopefully leading us somewhere. And then I'll put it all together and show what essentially is the next steps. What's the problem? Urea is increasing in usage. Ever since the Oklahoma City bombing, nitrates other than urea have been out of favor. On the Delmar Peninsula, we use poultry litter. It also has urea. Essentially, urea has been found in the Chesapeake Bay at parts greater than 60 parts per billion, which is what is considered the biological trigger. And that is a trigger for pseudonychia, which converts urea into domoic acid. Domoic acid causes amnesiac shellfish poisoning, which I think I've got already. But anyway, it is a neurotoxin, and what's the problem in Maryland is the fact that we have a very avid shellfish crab industry, and it could impact our very industry and the livelihood of the livelihood. It has become a serious problem in the West, and they are suffering from issues dealing with mammals going a little bit berserk, nuts otherwise. Basis of the study, basically, first question was raised by Ray Bryant, ARS up in Pennsylvania, and says, is there a problem? Should we be warned about it? Does it reach the ditches? If so, how much reaches the ditches? So we looked at runoff rates. We looked at vertical and lateral movement of urea. What are the concentrations in our tributaries? Do they exceed what essentially is that trigger? We don't know. So we examined freshwater zones, estuarine zones, and we had a couple of accidental findings. And so what are the dynamics? And that is last, and basically what is going on. And essentially, we define those dynamics by using mesocosms. Are microbes involved in the process? Yes. One of the studies was done by Leo Kibbett, PhD student, and Dr. Allen and myself, and essentially using a rainfall simulator because we designed the project under the anticipation there would be rain. There was no rain for 3 years. So anyway, we had to simulate. And so we used this rainfall simulator, packed soil boxes, and essentially we had a variety of treatments. Essentially, is that pointer work? You essentially had, I can't read it from here, urea plus, you had litter, urea prill, and essentially dairy manure, incorporated litter, and ammonium sulfate. And what you see is the incorporated litter seemed to have very little runoff. But over time, there was very little runoff after about a week. And so essentially, runoff does not appear to be what is the issue. If you look at the piezometer studies, which is nothing but a tube cut into the soil, you essentially look at the patterns of urea near the ditch, which is shown by the line here, individual piezometers prior to the ditch where you collected water, and essentially you'll see very low urea concentrations in and around the ditches. Again, subsurface flow of urea does not seem to be an issue. However, we attempted to go ahead and do the lysimeter studies, and essentially looking at vertical flow, they were inconclusive. We had to use a garden hose and a sprinkler to try to simulate rain. It didn't work, so that is at this time inconclusive. What's going on in the tributary? Okay, several studies were done. This is done by Salkowski in the upper parts of the Minocan River. Since the Minocan River has about 20 years of data on nitrates, we used it. And essentially what you saw was basically the tributaries, you had significant levels of essentially urea. It was highest in the summer when there was no urea being applied to the fields. And again, it also went ahead and showed some unexpected results. And here you see, where is that arrow? I can never find the arrow. Here is when urea is being applied. Here is when you do not have urea being applied. We also then went ahead and looked at 38 sites in the Monocacy River. 16 were edge sites, that was on the edge of the river, and 6 were main stem, went right down the middle. And again, we included the previous sites done in the freshwater zones. What this basically showed was, if you look at groups 7 and 8, these essentially are up in the headwaters. These are down in the main stem, and it appears in those areas dominated, if you will, by wetlands and forests, had the highest level of urea production, and it always was raised in after a rainfall event. Essentially, we also looked at summer, winter, spring, and you again get the highest concentrations of urea in the summer, again, when no urea is being applied. And again, that's why I call it research. One of the unexpected findings is that if you go ahead and correlate percent agriculture against urea in the tributary, it goes down, and you look at wetlands, it increases. Another unexpected result, this is from a ditch. Went ahead and looked at the flow rate. As the flow rate went down, urea concentration rose, then it dropped, and then it began to rise right at the point where flow rates out were, would essentially make it stagnant. NO3 went up also. So if you look at the dynamics in ditch, basically this gives you forest wetlands. This goes ahead and gives you mixed agricultural lands, and this gives you the drainage ditches, and these are taken in the summer. These are rates for the summer. Mesocosm study. Basically, we used 2 gallon plastic buckets, had a variety of sediments, essentially from the ditches, and each bucket was monitored for ammonium nitrate and urea at 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, and so on hours. The important one is here we see in a clean ditch, which was stripped, unclean ditch, which had been stripped out for about 14 years, and you'll see a significant rise in urea. Unusually, forests didn't do much here. So forests and wetlands, we thought it might, based on previous information. So we put it all together. Surface movement of urea is unlikely. Lateral flow in groundwater is probably unlikely. Vertical movement uncertain because the lysimeter studies did not really show us anything. But urea is present in ditches at times when urea is not being applied. Same for the main stem of the Monocacy. And so essentially the theory is it reforms following rain events because we think the nitrate is being, legacy nitrate is getting into the ditches. Urea does not form de novo. It requires organisms, believe it or not. So therefore it's got to be the bugs, okay? Every microbiologist will now beat me to death. So we go back to the drawing board, literally. And we ask the question, you have nitrification, denitrification, what happens here? Is this a pathway? It's not energetically favored, so probably not. We do know that microbes, when stressed, will go ahead and begin to break down their amino acid and nucleic acids and go ahead and from them begin to, through the urea cycle, form urea. And that may be under the conditions that we're seeing, those microbial communities are stressed. So what are we doing? Basically, we're looking at genomics, transcriptomics, and again, these are going to be done in the ditches as well as in mesocosm, basically under base flow conditions, rain events, and we'll look at the mesocosm in homogenized ditch soils and soils that have been amended, okay? So the idea here is to try to see, is there a change in the microbial community composition? Caveat here is, while it is considered cutting-edge technology, it only suggests a change is occurring, but it does not say which organisms are involved, and that's a problem because we want to experimentally play with these bugs, okay? So we decided, okay, fine, and we've got these studies going on now. We're looking at indicator species, okay? We have collected 5 sediments from 5 locations. We have isolated a series of microbes. We're in the process of identifying what those microbes are, and we have done a test study with E. coli, and we're able to go ahead and demonstrate that we can affect growth of E. coli using varying nitrogen sources, including urea. And so essentially we look at these growth rates and we monitor them, and what we want to do is couple those with genomics so that if we can go ahead and say one of these guys belongs into one of the communities, we should be able to go ahead and say, use it as an indicator species, manipulate, and then create a predictive model to see how things will work. It's been funded through USDA Capacity Building Grants Program, and thanks to the technical staff, Nancy, Pete, Amy, Sabrina, Joey, Rico, laboratory students, office staff, and everybody.
We have questions for our speakers.
Yeah.
Can you speak at all about what kind of implication this research might have on the total maximum daily load in the Chesapeake and some of the practices that are being, kind of pushed onto the farming community?
I'm not sure I want to answer that. That's a problem in the Chesapeake Bay. I don't know what the impact will be. The question here, for example, is a lot of what we would learn here may allow us to use remediation techniques using, let's say, bacteria to go ahead and help reduce the amount of nitrate urea that is getting into the bay. So it's really pointed to kind of understanding how that goes. It also has application to bioreactors. We need to know why bioreactors work. It's, again, the bugs folks. They're the ones that are doing the work. So I'm hoping that it would help the farmers rather than cause the opposite.
Any other questions?
Is Dr. Patricia Glimmer aware of your work?
Yes. She knows we're doing it.
For others in the audience, she is a marine biologist.
Yeah. But overall, the trigger right now is not being reached at a regular rate. I mean, that's the problem that happened in the West, is it was ignored, and when it became a problem, it was only manifest after birds and seals began to show some very unique behavioral patterns.
Any other questions for our speaker? All right, thank you very much.
I got to get down.